Well, it's lovely this evening to be able to talk to someone whose job is really to, I suppose you could say, look at the horizon at, or look at the horizon or over the horizon to see what's happening on the political scene, but more importantly, what is currently affecting maybe public policy and governance. And so I welcome this evening to Radio Wātea, Deb Te Kaua. And Deb is with the Canterbury University, and she'll be able to tell us a little bit about her job. Kia ora, Deb. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Wātea this evening.
Oh, Mary Peter, it's such a pleasure to be both with Wātea, but also you and also your listeners. Thank you for the invitation. I hope tonight that I'm useful to everyone.
Well, look, there's no doubt, Deb, that we're living in interesting times. My goodness, I mean, we only have to look at what's happening overseas to know that that's interesting and, of course, tragic. It's like at the same time when we look at Gaza. But New Zealand as well, we've got some challenges ahead of us. I was at Narawahia, Ratana, and of course went up to Waitangi. So, you know, challenges ahead. And you at the university, and particularly in your position, which I'm going to ask you if you can just clarify for me at Canterbury University, but you must also be looking at perhaps what some of the challenges might be for us as a nation, but possibly for iwi, and more importantly, I think, for some of our Māori public servants.
Perfectly. It's exactly what I've been thinking about, Meripika. At the university, I'm lucky enough to teach a 400-level course. It is one of the courses that students who want to do a master's in public policy or politics or foreign affairs, international relations, they do the course that I teach just to kind of get to grips with some of the big ideas in public administration and how it interacts with policy. And so one of the things, there are a number of things that I've been thinking about over the past few months. In fact, I wrote an article in I Tangata about how well-placed I think Te Ao Māori is. But one of the things I've been thinking about is what it must be like being a Māori public servant at the moment, and how they contribute the best, but then also just take care of their own mana. That's the thing that's keeping me awake right at night at the moment.
Well, of course, and you're so right, because you know, in the public service has come under scrutiny in terms of but it's really what we're seeing, and it is about Māori, te reo Māori, and also maybe it seems a little bit about the devaluing of Māori that we've seen, and not just since this government's come in, it's just over a period of time where te reo Māori and tikanga Māori, it seems to me that from time to time, if it can be useful, it'll be used within the public service, and if they don't, if they get a change of heart, well, it can be jettisoned.
I think your observations are right, and they are clear. My friend, I was lucky enough to be trained in the public service by Tawira Gardner in the days when Hiki Aparata was running the policy group. We had the likes of Dr. John Tamahori guiding us young public servants. And these were just after the days when the likes of Parikoro Horomia was running, Department of Labour. I think you would have seen Hami Pirupi over at Conservation. In fact, even the Honourable Shane Jones, I think, was still, I think, over at Maruwhenua, over at Environment. And so, look, one of the lucky things about those days is we were surrounded by extraordinary Māori public servants. And, you just think about this. During Parikura Horomia's time under Bill Birch, he was the only public servant to grow his vote, the only one, for nearly 6 years. So there's very something special that Parikura was developing at his time. And then when I think about the things that Wira Gardner used to teach us, did we understand the Cabinet Office manual, did we understood what it meant to be Māori but also in service of the government, did we understand that ministers couldn't hire or fire us, but similarly we couldn't speak badly about them publicly, And then when I think about those days, I think about Hiki a Parata and, you know, the extraordinary policy thinking and challenges that she laid in front of us. Like, we learnt treaty analysis, but we learnt value for money, we learnt effectiveness analysis, efficiency analysis, cost-benefit analysis. Like, in those days, my friend, I feel like we were riding on the wave of some very important, significant Māori public servants and then being tooled up for the future. And I guess one of the reasons I've been worried about some of the young ones in the service at the moment is I'm not sure they've got or have access to the same support that I had when I first started off the service some 26 years ago. So, yeah, that's my thinking at the moment. I think you're right to point out that, you know, things come and they go. Isn't that the history of the Crown Māori relationships? Mm-hmm. Right back to the, oh goodness, right back to the committee systems, right back to the welfare offices. You know, it is a system that where the tide goes in and the tide goes out, and then I guess it's how well placed are the Māori public servants to respond when the tide is out. What are your thoughts, my friend?
Well, I think when you mention the public servants and the caliber of Hekia and Wira and Hami, I mean, and they actually came through the ranks, and so they learnt everything right across.
Yeah.
And so by the time they got into their senior positions, they certainly knew what the expectation of their ministers were. They knew their job as a professional public servant. And so they excelled at it. And apart from the fact that they also brought the Māori lens, the Māori worldview to their mahi as well. So they were exceptional. But I do think today, Deb, we do not have that depth and breadth of Māori leadership to in any great numbers within the public service. So Māori are being tooled up and tutored, if you want to call it, or possibly mentored within the public service by people who come from the same disciplines and don't really, if I can be so bold and honest to say, they don't really share and have a view that is different from the norm.
I think you're exactly right, and I think that's the other, that is my thinking, my friend. Indeed, that is my hypothesis. Is that all the systems that I got to enjoy and my friends got to enjoy as a baby public servant some 26, 30 years ago, I think we're seeing that the ones who've just joined the service over the last 6 years, maybe 10 years, haven't enjoyed the same sort of support. Let me give you an example, my friend. I was mentoring a number of new public servants, young ones, and one of the things that they've been telling me is they feel like they're not heard anymore. And they're worried that ministers won't come and ask them. And again, I don't have easy answers here, Medipika, but one of the things I'm having to talk to them about is, do you realise that the table isn't yours? That the table is, in fact, ministers, and you are but a guest at their table, and your job is to be a good guest, and be invited back because your advice added value. My friend, I was lucky enough to see the likes of Hekia and Wira and John Tamakori, just beautiful advisors to ministers, give them really difficult advice, very courageous, very free and frank advice, and then be invited back. They wouldn't make a decision unless they had heard what Tawira wanted to thought about a particular issue. And that's what worries me, is I'm not sure this generation of public servants has understand that it's not their table, it is indeed a ministerial table, but they want to be a good guest and they want to be constantly invited back because they give that advice that ministers are not going to get anywhere else.
Yeah, I think you are so right. It is about knowing their role. It is about claiming, I suppose you could say, claiming their territory. And making sure that they do give the advice, and it might not be always appreciated, but the fact is, it's what the ministers need to know. Now, should they decide to go down another track, well, kaitapai, then obviously one alerts them, hopefully, to what the implications might be. But if they don't have the ear of the minister, or if they're not at that level, if I can put it like that, or at that senior, most senior role, then all the ministers are getting are basically what they've always had in the past, which is nothing spectacular and nothing that's going to be transformative.
Yes, my dear, that's one of the things that is keeping me awake at night, is our chief executives giving ministers their first best advice, or are they giving them the advice that will just keep ministers happy? Now, I accept, by the way, that the government's got its 100-day plan and it wants to get things done. But in my view, the senior officials in the public service, is their job is still to be professionally competent and use free and frank advice. And when they disagree with ministers or ministers disagree with them, is, you know, they hurry up and they go off and implement it. So, again, my friend, I think you point to this, one of the things that's keeping me awake at night. But I just want to take us off in another direction, because I've been thinking about this kind of bargain, right, a bargain that gets struck between ministers and officials. And, you know, ministers give up the right to hire or fire these senior officials or direct them at will. And in return, though, ministers expect a politically loyal, albeit nonpartisan, competent and accountable public service. Like, that's the deal. That's absolutely the deal. And then there's another deal they make with one another. In return for an assured place, and for influence, for shaping ministers' thinking, and blooming good salaries, Mary Pecker, in return for blooming good salaries and a defined area of responsibility for as long as they want it, officials give up the right to express opposition and moan about ministers publicly. And I've been a little bit worried about, actually not a little bit, I've been very worried about some of our Māori public servants criticising the government because they're breaking down that bargain. Like, if you want to moan about the government, well then, you know, don't work in the public service. Come and work on our side. Mm. Yeah, so that's the thing that's been just worrying me as well, my friend. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you are right. I mean, if you're in a position, you know, which obviously one would say that there's mutual respect on both sides, but and the other thing too, you don't have to criticize in public. It's not your job, and it's certainly not your job to go to the media, and also Deb, to leak. I'm not sure if it's, but also this leaking of documents, that to me is just. That's amazing that a public servant would even think to do that. But obviously it's not unheard of, and it seems to me that it's quite common. They have difficulty finding out who did the leaking, and the mere fact that they should have to go and chase anybody for leaking confidential either Treasury papers or papers that are still Cabinet papers, that to me I find very, very alarming, really.
Me too, my friend. Look, I just think about, there's two things there that worry me. Look at me. Tonight I'm sharing you all of my worries, Mary Pecker, but there are two things that worry me there. One is, I mean, it's all very well and good for them to leak, but what happens if someone is very, anti a treaty settlement or anti, you know, something that, again, that our lawyers have secured for one of our iwi? What happens if a public servant started, you know, leaking against us? Or leaking against an iwi, like, you know, what's good for the gander is good for the goose. It could be the other way around. So I don't like the leaking. I really don't like the leaking because I think it's a tool that can be weaponized against all of us.
Yes.
And the second thing here, though, is I watch the US closely, and not the politics because, it gives me a headache, but what I watch is the way in which the Republicans are trying to politicize the federal service there. So they've got a couple of political layers in the US, and then they've got, you know, independent civil servants in the federal layers. And the Republican proposal is to politicize the entire service, the entire federal service, so that the president can appoint to almost every role. And that when people lick against the government, they bring that conversation here. Because what is happening then is we've got individual public servants wanting to be political actors. And if I could just mihi to you, you, my friend, you put your penny down, right? You go to the community and you say, oh, well, I would like you to vote me on our list. Like, if an official won't do that, I don't think leaking is good. If you want to be a political actor, then put your name down in front of your community and run. That is my thinking.
Yes. Look, I'm not sure, but I think over the years, to me, we don't seem to have... Years ago, the public service was a sought-after position for many Māori because, you know, you could go in and you could move across a state government department, or you could move from one to another. The work was interesting, et cetera, and you could move up. But to me, I think the numbers of Māori in the public service have dropped off. Not only that, I think certainly those who have been promoted, I don't know how many chief executives of a government department, apart from perhaps the Te Puni Kōpiri, I don't know if we've got any. Or we might have MSD.
Yeah, look, I think I do have something nice to say about the finishing Public Service Commissioner, Peter Hughes. But then, so I'm going to do a bouquet, and then there's like a brickbat. I think he's made a difference in the top tiers. It's a difficult role, you know this. Chappie Te Kāne, we've got Chappie running Oranga Tamariki. Here the Bagot is about to take over as the Public Service Commissioner. She whakapapas to Manio Portal. We've got a number of Brooke Barrington has just moved from Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, moving over to MFAT. So we've got a number, I think, of Māori in these public service chief executive roles. But Meripika, you know better than me that it is the engine room of the public service is the third and fourth tier. It is
absolutely
the third and fourth tier. Right? That's where culture is determined, where resources are allocated, where services are procured. It's in the third and fourth tier in the engine room of the service that I do not think we have representation. And might I add, too, you're right on the numbers. Numbers of kind of Māori in service, we're static. We've been constantly static, which is the opposite of how our population is going. So even though it's at around, I think, anywhere between 12 and 15% at any moment in time, it's not consistent with how our population is developing. And my friend, I might just add something in here because it's a little number which I think is interesting. Māori trust and confidence in the public service is back under 50%. Back, and I think it's you're pointing to we don't often see ourselves, on the front lines or indeed in some of those kind of core decision-making roles. But, yeah, we're under 50% at the moment.
And I think that's, to me, that's becoming, that could become quite a dangerous situation to be in, because trust to me is paramount, whether you're working for an organisation or whether you're the consumer or user of services. When trust isn't there, you might use the services, you might, but you don't give it, you don't give it your all, and you don't. I really feel that that's starting to undermine the very fabric, I believe, of what we hold as democracy, and so that does worry me as well.
And one of the interesting things with that number, and I might just I'll flick it to you later on, but it's they measure these two things, like your trust in the public service to do the right thing and then your actual experience. And even though our numbers are much lower, I think they're the lowest of all of the cohorts, it's our trust, our before we even had an experience, do we want to go and ask them? And that's the first step. And you're right, it's the difference on cohesion. Absolutely right.
Well, the other thing also, we've just heard today, the announcement that was made today by the Minister, Louise Upston, and she was talking about, you know, obviously there's going to be some repercussions for beneficiaries if they don't actively seek work, and, you know, if don't turn up or for whatever reason, if they fall foul of MSD or the WINS office, there'll be repercussions. But you see, what she's discounting, I believe, or hadn't even probably thought about, is their experience over sometimes it's quite a number of years, has been nothing to write home about. So, you know, it's very difficult because trust that is either never there or was never there or that has been lost over time, possibly because of the way they've been treated by particularly beneficiaries have been treated, that's very hard to either regain or bring back, you know, to try and capture again. And so when I heard that today, I thought, oh, my goodness, you're talking to a group of people who have no trust, basically, in the government department that they see as probably should be there to support them, but is already sounding punitive measures should they fall down.
Oh, I had not caught up with that announcement, my friend. I will go and have a look at it. Goodness. Well, I was just thinking about COVID, right? I was just thinking about immunization. And I was thinking about an evaluation I did for Arawhiti, Punakokere, and Manatū Hauora. And one of the big findings there, like it was off the track, one of the big findings was the importance of the on-the-ground person, the conversation about just sharing information was absolutely critical. And why it really mattered is, you know, the Crown is not in many of our rural and remote communities, and actually sometimes it's not even in many of our provinces. And so, you know, trust climbs when the Crown isn't present either. So kind of, I mean, I guess our big finding actually was just give it to whānau order to deliver. Anyway, my friend, that's all a bit random, but I hope that has been useful for you.
Oh, it certainly has. And, you know, we've just got to make sure that our whānau, because we do care, obviously we care, we have to care, and we do care. And the public servants, I remember once listening to Hekia, and she said, you know, public servants, and this was going back 20 years at least, and she said Māori public servants come in for quite a lot of criticism. And I remember her saying, you should be thankful, well, not thankful, but she said, you should be pleased that we're actually there. She said, because, you know, we're learning, and we can share our knowledge at some stage. Yeah. We might go home, we might move on to other jobs, but we know the political system in terms of, you know, how government runs itself. And the role of public servants. And I thought she was so right. And when I think of Di Grinnell, Brenda Tahi, and Carter, those were stunning people.
Right. So that generation.
Yeah.
And, you know, because mine is not a criticism of the individual public servants at the moment. It's why haven't we, what happened to Brenda? Where is Di? Why aren't they wrapped around all of these people? Because as you said before, you know, who is looking after these public servants in the system at the moment? And we have been lucky, every single hapū and iwi has been lucky to have an extraordinary public servant. Where are they now? Where are they?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
No, that's beautiful. Right. That is right, you know, because they were of the caliber that you could trust, that you would trust them. They did have the ear of the various ministers, of their ministers and others. Yeah. They also had a network of senior Māori within the public service, and I'm talking most senior, who would get together from time to time, and I know this, and support each other and talk about the positions that were coming up and be encouraging of each other. So, and I would suspect now that that's pretty much non-existent now, and which would be a shame.
I really don't know because I left the service a long time ago. I think Luke Comer was good at that. He was good at kind of looking for the talents and next. I think I'm a little bit far away from it, but I think you and I both agree, like far away, whether or not that happens. But I think you and I both agree that our best Māori public servants came up through their organisations. They understand policy, right? They understand what good performance looks like, and they're very good at making sure resources go from the Crown side of the ledger to our side of the ledger. And I feel like we've lost that. I feel like they've lost that, and it's showing up right now.
Well, it is showing up now. And I think what the government is now saying that they want to look at about a 6% across the board cut. And so that'll obviously come from staffing. I mean, it'll come from other places as well, but we all know that the biggest the biggest cost is your wage bill, is your salary component. And so a lot of people will probably be public servants. And you know what I thought prior to the election or the election results? When you're campaigning on we're going to slash the numbers of public servants, I thought at the time, if I was a public servant, I would think, good gracious, am I still going to have a job within 6 months? You know, I've got my mortgage, I've got the kids in school, I've got, you know, dad's not well or something like anything, any number of commitments. And if I was a public servant hearing, oh, you know, we're going to cut the numbers, I would be quite anxious. I would have been quite anxious. And obviously now that's going to become a reality in many government departments.
I think you're absolutely right. And you and I both know this. You've run big organisations. You've run devolved organisations. You've led large, large networks of people. Is you don't get those people to be more productive by cost cutting. You get it by being clear about what you need them to do each day and supporting them to do it. And so, look, the government's made a set of choices, but you're right. I'm very worried personally about the cuts to the front line, and Hikia is right. You know, Māori public servants bring something very special to the work of Awanapanga. So I think we watch this nervously and keeping an eye out on our own, my friend.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I hope that all of the public servants that are listening this evening will pat themselves on the back. And we know that it can be a difficult environment in which to work. And we just thank them for staying there and doing the hard yards and being observant on our behalf at all times.
That's right. As long as they're getting results, Meripika, and moving resources outside of the ledger, yes.
Look, Deb, thank you so much. It's been very, very good talking to you, and I hope from time to time this year we'll have you back on Radio Wātea. It's been so informative.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Anytime you call, I will be there. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Kia ora. Well, that certainly was a very informative discussion that I've had with Deb Te Kaua. And Deb is a lecturer at the Canterbury University, and she lectures in public policy and governance. And, you know, that is just something that I would have always loved to have gone and taken some papers years ago in those subjects. I never did. But however, it's just great that she is there. And, you know, she is so right. And our conversation, what we were talking about, was really about the role of the public servant, but also the value that the Māori public servant brings to informing government. And there are some issues there that they'll be faced. Our Māori public servants will face this year. There's no doubt about that. So it's been very, very nice being with you this evening. I'm going to be back with you tomorrow night. So for now, kia ora, mā te wā.